"We can't just assume the Ivets are guilty like this," Rye Mulvey said. "Not on his word." He glanced scathingly down at Horst. That was how Warwick took him unawares. The hound landed on his chest, bowled him over. Rye Mulvey yelped in terror as Warwick's bart, long fangs snapping centimetres from his nose. "You," Poel Manani said. It was spat out like an allegation. "You, lawyer man, you are the one who wanted me to ease off them. You let them have their A-frame. You wanted them walking round free. If we'd done this by the book, kept those dickheads in the filth where they belong, none of this would have happened." He called Warwick off from the panting, badly scared man. "But you're right. We don't know the Ivets had anything to do with Gwyn or Roger or the Hoffmans. We can't prove that, can we, counsel for the defence? So all we've got is Carter. Do you know anyone else out here that is going to rip apart a 10-year-old child? Do you? Because if you do, I think we'd all like to hear who." Rye Mulvey shook his head, teeth clamped together in anguish. "Right then," Pole said. "So what do you say, Dmitri? Carter was your boy. What do you think we should do to the people who did this to your son?"
"Kill them," Dmitri said from the centre of the little knot of people who were trying to comfort him.
"Kill every last one of them."
High above the treetops, the kestrel wheeled and turned in an agile aerial dance, using the fast streams of hot, moist air to stay aloft with minimum effort. Latton always allowed the bird's natural instincts to take over on such occasions, contenting himself simply to direct. Down below, under the almost impenetrable barrier of leaves, people were moving. Little flecks of colour were visible through the minute gaps, the distinctive pattern of a particular shirt, grubby, sweaty skin. The kestrel's predator instincts amplified each motion, building up a comprehensive picture. Four men carried the body of the boy on a makeshift stretcher. They moved slowly, picking their way over roots and small gullies, all of them labouring under an air of reluctance. Ahead of them was the main body of men led by Supervisor Manani. They walked with a bold stride, men who had a purpose. Latin could see it in the stern, hate-filled faces, the grim determination. Those that didn't have laser rifles had acquired clubs or stout sticks. Trailing away behind everyone else, the kestrel saw Ruth Hilton and Rye Mulvey, weak, dejected figures who never said a word, both lost in their own private guilt. Horst Elwes was left by himself in the small clearing. He was still curled up on the ground, shivering quite violently. Every now and then he would let out a loud cry, as if something had bitten him. Latton suspected his mind had gone completely. It didn't matter. He had fulfilled his role beautifully. Leslie Atcliffe broke surface 10 meters away from the end of Aberdale's jetty, a creel full of mouse crabs clamped between his hands. He rolled onto his back and began to kick towards the shore, towing the creel. Rifts of gunmetal cloud were starting to slash the western horizon. It would rain in another 30 minutes, he reckoned. Kay was sitting on the shore just above the water, opening a creel and tipping the still-wriggling mouse crabs into a box ready for filleting. She was wearing a pair of faded shorts, halter made out of a cut-up T-shirt, boots with blue socks rolled down, and a scrappy dried grass hat she had woven herself. Leslie enjoyed the look of her lean body, a rich nut brown after all those months in the sun. It was another 3 days until they would have a night together, and he liked to think Kay enjoyed screwing with him more than the others. She certainly talked to him the rest of the time, like a friend. His feet found the shingle, and he stood up. "Another lot for you," he called. The mouse crabs slithered and squirmed round each other in the creel, 10 at least, narrow flat bodies with 12 spindly legs apiece, brown scales that did resemble wet fur, and a pointed head ending in a black tip like a rodent nose. Kay grinned and waved at him, her filleting knife gripped in her hand, steel blade glinting in the sun. That grin made his whole day worthwhile. The search party emerged from the jungle 40 meters away from the quay. Leslie knew something was wrong straight away. They were walking too fast, the way angry men walk. And they were heading towards the jetty, all of them, 50 or more. Leslie stared uncertainly. It wasn't the jetty. They were heading for him.
God's brother, he murmured. They looked like a lynch mob. Quinn. It had been something Quinn had done. Quinn, who was always so smart, he never got caught.